You're listening to Geek Watch 1 with Kylan and Ken on the Tangent Bound Network.
Do not adjust your settings. Take your hands off the keys. Your search is over. These are the geeks you're looking for. You found Geek Watch 1 with Kylan and Ken.
This is going to be quite a ride.
Hey, Jim, boom! That's a bad outfit. Boom!
I love you.
Me too, man. Hit me, my turn! Am I the meanest?
Sure enough.
Am I the prettiest?
Sure enough.
Am I the baddest mofo low down around this town?
Sure enough.
Well, who am I?
Sure enough.
The Shogun of Harlem.
For what lies ahead, ready are you?
We're police officers. We're not trained to handle this kind of violence.
Hey, Geeksters. I'm Kylan.
And I'm Ken.
And you found Geek Watch 1.
Welcome back, Geeksters. Issue 82 of Geek Watch 1. I'm sounding a little weird just because, dude, I'm out of it. I've been sick for like 2 days.
What happened?
I don't know. Thursday night, it started coming in as a scratchy throat. Head cold started, and it was weird. For this time, it started as a chest cold, and then moved its way into my head.
And it just didn't stop.
Exactly. All day yesterday, Vicky had an art show down in Canton, in North Canton, and which had nobody there. It was the most boring show we've been to.
And cold.
Yeah, the hall was about 60 to 63 degrees all day.
Oh, damn.
Jeez.
And we're sitting there shivering.
Wait, it was not that. That was just what our thermostat was reading, but it wasn't even that, because I was blue the whole time.
Yeah, Vicky's had blue fingers most of the day.
It was so a jacket on.
I'm sitting there dying, and it's just... And then last night I recorded Wookiee Radio.
Well, the lady that runs it decided to have her baby early and had it that day.
Yeah, the lady who runs it had her baby that day, so they didn't get all the signage out and everything they're supposed to get out. Because I guess, talking to other people, this is the show that they have like 10 to 15 shows a year over all of Ohio.
Yeah.
Okay. And I guess this is the lowest turnout they've ever had at one of their shows.
Wow.
It just happened to be everything hit all at once. They switched it to a new month. I guess they usually do it in November. This year they did it in December. She had her baby today, so she wasn't able to make sure everything got done.
She had it yesterday.
Oh, well, yeah, during the day of the show. So it just, everything happened all at once. It was cold. I was sick. It just was a terrible day.
Damn.
Then I recorded, I slept for like 2 hours when I got home, then had Wookiee Radio last night. So it's just been a long weekend.
A little bit.
So what have you guys been up to?
Well, last weekend we hit a local convention that featured independent artists and writers. It was called Genghis Khan.
Okay.
Yeah, it was up in Lakewood, and it was like a one day only on Sunday for a few hours.
Cool.
And it was like the 10th or 11th time they've done it. I mean, they've done it for quite a few years, but this was the second time we'd heard of it and the first time we'd actually been able to go.
Right.
I think and I've heard of it before.
Yeah, it's just like I randomly lucked out and heard about it last year sometime, and we couldn't make it. But it's all like self-published authors and comic book artists. And actually, our friend Marcus was there.
That's because Marcus, the reason he's able to make a living at what he does, because he knows how to hustle.
He goes to every single con possible.
That's right, every single
one. If it's a convention, if he doesn't have a convention, I'm sure you can find him at a local flea market.
That's right, exactly.
And he actively sells his books. Every time someone walks by, hey, you want to listen to something? He'll tell them all about it.
Yeah, exactly. So it was kind of cool. Like, there was a lot of, obviously, you don't see these independent artists at the bigger comic conventions and that because, you know, they can't necessarily afford tables and that kind of thing if they're just selling their stuff. So it was pretty cool. We met a few, we bought a few things. They were selling their comics for like about $5 a piece, and they had artwork and stuff like that too. And Kylan ended up getting a couple of like posters for what were they, like $1 a piece?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So, yeah. And, like, I got a time travel comic called Time Spanners, and they had funded it on Indiegogo and finally had a printed copy, and this was actually their first convention they were vending at, so that was kind of cool. And, we met with a guy who was there on behalf of another kind of indie artist comic convention down in Columbus called Cartoon Crossroads, which is, I think he said it's going to be in September.
Okay.
The end of September next year, and it's got like two main locations, but is also spread out at a few smaller locations throughout the city over the span of 4 days.
Oh, nice.
It says everything that can be free will be free in terms of admission. So that's kind of cool too. So when they have a little more information, we'll pick up on it and see who might be, like, they tend to get some big names apparently. So we'll see who might be appearing and maybe we'll make it down there. We'll see what it's like for September, but
it sounds kind of like what Andy does with his shows to where, like with Oddmall, if he doesn't have to charge for it, he doesn't.
Exactly.
Con of the Cop, you pay for your badge. Everything else is free if he can do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Including food.
For Genghis Khan, it was free, and it kind of made it worth it for us to drive up to Lakewood because it's almost an hour drive.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, well, it's free, and we'll get to see some stuff. And, oh, I won a little piece of art from one guy because he was doing a roll for art game, and basically he had a D20, and you rolled and he rolled, and whoever got the higher number won, and you got a piece of his art if you won. So I got a higher number.
Nice.
So it was fun. It was good to go to spend an hour or so there.
Well, I know there is another convention coming up. There are two, really, that we were thinking about possibly getting involved in that we've not said. But I know in February, we've got Groundhog Day coming up in Hudson.
Right.
And we got, I think it's March is when Concoction's coming up.
I think it's March, yeah.
Yeah, so March.
We got to sit down off air and talk about those.
Yep.
So, one thing I want to remind you, Geeksters, this week, remember, that since this comes out Wednesday, and you got 3 days till Oddmall in Canton, the Chris Makahana Kwanzmadan, isn't it?
I think you got it right.
It's only taken me 2 years to get
the name from last year.
Yeah. Well, this is the first time it's been an actual true Christmas show or holiday show.
That's true.
Because every other time he's done it, it's been in November.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I know.
Yeah, we know from last year that Canton is a great location. So.
Mm-hmm. I know we were being in North Canton, we saw one or two vendors at the show yesterday that actually are going to be at Oddmall next week. And most of the people that did make it into the show at least knew what Oddmall was.
Nice.
So that's one thing that everybody was saying, that the nice thing about Andy's shows is he has never failed to bring in a crowd.
Mm-hmm. And right. it'll be packed with vendors because he sold out a while ago. So there'll be a lot of
stuff. Yeah, well, he sold out like four times. The first time was in July.
Yeah.
And he's actually opened up a lot of space in the museum this year too.
Yeah, it will literally be crammed with vendors because he was trying to fit more booths in wherever he could.
That's right. And we will have Santa Claus and his elves here this year.
And probably some Krampuses
apparently, and goblins, of course.
Yes, he's going to have all kinds of holiday creatures.
He's encouraging people to wear holiday costumes, etc. So, even non-denominational, whatever you want to be, just, you know,
exactly.
wear your stuff.
And remember, it doesn't have to be holiday, huh?
I wear my onesie.
Yeah, Vicky will wear her dragon onesie again. But it doesn't matter holiday or not, Oddmall is a cosplay event also. So wear whatever cosplay you got. If you can holiday it up, that's awesome. If you can't, don't worry about it. Bring it anyway.
And there's the costume contest on Saturday too still.
Is he doing
there?
It?
Yep.
I think so.
And I heard Mr. O'Brien is actually going to have a surprise for the show this year.
Uh-oh.
On the stage.
Uh-oh.
He's got Christmas music, right?
Okay.
Yeah, he's going to have Christmas music also, but he has a surprise for Andy and for the rest of the Oddmall staff.
And just remember, it's a family-friendly event, so,
yes.
You know, it's not going to be that exciting a surprise.
No, it is. But remember, Oddmall is a free event at the Canton Cultural Arts Center on Saturday and Sunday, the 10th and 11th? So come out and check it out. We will be in the auditorium there doing our show like we always do. I'm not sure how we're recording, but we will be recording at some point over the weekend. I think that covers most of the Oddmall and Con news for the moment. And that's all house. Do we have any other housekeeping stuff you guys wanted to get over?
I think we're good for now.
Yeah, I think there's everything.
Okay. Well, what's been happening in the way of news this year or this week?
This year?
Hey, I told you I'm half out of it.
Well, I mean, one thing, since you just watched it, we could say the Guardians of the Galaxy official trailer finally dropped.
Dude, that's hilarious.
Yes.
I just saw it.
and there's a lot of awesomeness because you see, like, the big space creature they're fighting, and it's the first appearance of Mantis.
Where did they find a big, giant space squid?
I think it's officially a creature from the comics. I forget the name of it, though, but it does have a name.
It's like a giant Kraken.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Han Solo was smoked.
Yeah.
But and of course you have Baby Groot throughout. So.
Oh yeah. Well, Baby Groot and Drax are gonna steal this movie.
Yeah, absolutely. As usual.
So, anybody who's still not sure about Dave Bautista as an actor, just watch this. And you know he's having a good time.
Between this and his run in Bond, he did pretty well in was it Spectre?
Yeah, Spectre.
He did pretty well.
He's killed it in every role he's done.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And they're all different characters. Yeah. If you look in Spectre, it was a totally different type of character. It was a straight man thug. In this, he's kind of a thug character, but he's more comedy and stuff in it. Right. What was the other? He was in another big role like this.
He's kind of a serious dummy in a way.
Kinda.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember all this stuff, but everything I've seen him in, he's impressed me. But then that's also this class of wrestlers right now.
Isn't
right.
he in the Fast and Furious series?
No, The Rock is.
Rock is. Rock. I don't think Bautista is.
But if you look at wrestlers in general, since The Rock basically has hit the scene, they're actually more, they're as much actors as they are athletes.
Mm-hmm.
They actually take acting lessons. They learn this stuff. It's not like when Hogan decided, oh, I'm just going to start acting.
Right.
No.
Well, I mean, the Rock, most people just consider him an actor now and don't even think about him having been a wrestler.
Exactly. And you look at, but if you look at his wrestling run, especially when it came to his promos, you see where his ability comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The guy had timing to start with. He wouldn't have been as popular a character as he was if it wasn't for the comedic timing and things like that. It's not just his in-ring work that got him over.
True. And apparently he can sing, but I haven't seen Moana. I've just heard the commercials for the damn doll.
He actually did put a CD out back early 2000s, I think, or something like that. Or he had one or two songs that actually came out when he was wrestling.
Of course.
Yeah, but that was on the WWE.
That was when they did their own one. Yeah.
Yeah.
He liked pie.
Yeah, he does like pie, so shut up. And John Cena is another one. He's coming up in acting, too.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
He's apparently going to host Saturday Night Live, even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was last night.
I don't know. I don't watch it.
Well,
I've given up on that show.
Yeah. Well, Saturday Night Live, it's been around so long that it works in spurts. Some classes at Saturday Night Live are phenomenal. Other ones are just okay, and they work their way until they get another good crew in there.
But, I mean, John Cena did pretty decent in Trainwreck, though. He's kind of funny.
Well, he's done a couple of movies through WWE Films also.
Yeah.
To me, those don't really count.
Yeah, because he's going to get
cast
because
they're not legitimate movies. They're just kind of like, let's throw a wrestler into an action film.
Usually.
That's a good way to learn.
Although some of them aren't check out a movie called Knucklehead. It's actually The Big Show in a comedy.
Okay.
Triple H did one also that was more of a comedy, a kid's comedy almost.
He was the bus driver, wasn't he?
Yeah, Knucklehead he was.
Yeah. See, they don't even sound appealing when you say they're in comedy. At least John Cena did like an adult comedy. He was mostly naked. He except for a towel hanging from something, he was naked in one scene. John Cena basically played a stereotypical jock. He was like a complete and utter rock, and he was.
So funny. there was no acting required.
Exactly.
Wait, Christian was in Blade 3. Was Blade 2?
Well, Triple H was in Blade 3.
Triple H was in Blade 3 with the Pomeranian with the mouth.
Well, Christian was in Haven with Edge. Edge was in there as a main recurring character for, two or three seasons, and Christian came in once or twice, too.
They want to get paid for their acting abilities and not beat up for them quite as much.
That's right.
Right.
That's what it is.
Guys
I don't blame
them. Guys like Edge are not allowed to wrestle anymore. He had a neck injury that he can't wrestle, so if he can start making money acting, that's awesome.
Absolutely.
Better money doesn't hurt as much.
That's right. Well, that's why I like I said before, why I like doing stunts a whole much more than wrestling. It doesn't hurt as much, and you make a whole lot more money.
Yep, there you go.
So.
And if you take a baby bump, everybody freaks out, and you're like, that didn't hurt.
So where were we when we started this? Guardians of Galaxy 2.
Because we were talking about Cena. Right.
You wanted to talk about Bautista. That's where it went to.
Yes.
One other thing of news that I had was it came out that Universal and Nintendo are teaming up to create a real-life Mario world. Nintendo is going to have rides at all of the Universal theme parks.
Oh, nice.
And that's pretty major because they've never had any kind of theme park, really real theme park presence. And this is kind of going to be another way to Universal take a dig at Disney and have a bunch of more big rides and big attractions and more of a theme kind of. They're probably Universal's kind of creating their own themed lands, much like Disney already has, because they created their Islands of Adventure in Florida with all the Marvel rides and they have their Harry Potter section now, and now they're going to have, within the next couple of years, they're going to have a whole Nintendo or Mario Land of some type. So
this may be a step that they're taking to move away from Marvel, maybe, because right now they have to spend money on their Marvel stuff or else they lose it.
Exactly.
They have to keep updating and upgrading the rides or else they lose the license. So they may be looking at something like this to take the place of like a Marvel Island.
Well, right. and that's just it. Like, you've got, in Hollywood and Japan, you don't really have the Marvel presence at Universal as much. And in Asia and Europe already, Disney can put their Marvel presence because their deal with Universal only stood for the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of got to look for something anyways. And of course, Nintendo is so huge globally that doing that, and then they could take it to the Islands of Adventure and just kind of rebrand some of the rides that are already there as well as create some new ones.
Right.
Well, Nintendo has so many, their own brands and their own, so many characters of their own now with Mario, with Zelda. How many are Nintendo exclusive characters? All the Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they got, go to
Pokemon
Japan.
Pokemon technically is not exclusive Nintendo.
Well, it is when it comes to video games. They'd have to
get rights in terms of that, whereas Nintendo has the rights outright for a lot of others.
Yeah. Well, some of the ones are Nintendo in-house created, like Mario or Zelda.
Right.
Those ones, the reason you've never seen them anywhere else, because Nintendo created them.
Yeah.
I believe, like, Donkey Kong is Nintendo created.
Mm-hmm.
Or it wasn't created by Nintendo, but they had bought it way early.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a pretty big thing for Universal to get that.
Yeah. So
kind of keeping it sort of gaming related, there was a couple of announcements this week. Marvel versus Capcom 4, which is actually, I believe it's going to be called Marvel versus Capcom Infinity, is going to be released in 2017 for the PS4. The funny thing is, a couple of weeks ago, I was kind of looking through because I hadn't seen anything Marvel versus Capcom related for the PS4, and I thought maybe I was missing something. Well, I wasn't, because it looks like the last game was Marvel versus Capcom 3, Fate of Two Worlds, and that was released in 2011.
Okay.
And at that point, the license was lost, ended. Well, there weren't even any announced plans for a new game. But then, all of a sudden, this week, it's announced. So in 2017, just be on the lookout for that.
But
now,
what's different? Like, didn't you say something was different?
Yeah, there's a big difference. Looks like there's not going to be mutants in this one.
Okay.
So they're going to be skewing more towards the cinematic roster of characters.
Okay.
So basically
no X-Men at all.
No X-Men, no Wolverine, no Magneto.
That is strange. They were a staple of those games.
Well, they were all the way back to 1994, I believe it was, X-Men Children of the Atom.
Yeah. Well, I remember the first crossover Capcom Marvel game I ever played was the original Marvel versus Street Fighter 2. Or no, I think it was X-Men versus Street Fighter 2 tag team.
Right.
Where you actually chose two of the characters from either universe, and it was an arcade stand-up game.
Yes, it was.
I played the crap out of that game.
So it looks like that instead of Wolverine, Cyclops, Storm, you know, you're going to get to have maybe Groot.
You could have all the galaxy ones, because they'd be aliens instead of mutants.
Oh, you know how fun it would be to play Groot in that? You could move in, because of the mechanics of the way the game works already, you got like Dalsim with the stretching arms and legs. That's Groot all over the place.
Exactly. So that's Groot. And then you could have Ant-Man or Drax for that matter. Mm-hmm. So there is that. And then kind of keeping it game related, there was also an announcement regarding Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, the Telltale series, which is going to be released in 2017 as well. And that's going to be across console, PC, and mobile devices. Now, the thing is, like, they have a really popular series going right now Walking Dead.
Yes.
And they just released one for Batman.
Yeah, the Telltale games are a newer genre that is actually kind of... Have you ever played any of these games where you're actually playing through a... Basically, mm-hmm. you're just part of a motion comic almost.
Right. Yeah, we played part of the Walking Dead one.
Yeah, the part of Walking Dead one was fun.
I have the one that's based on Fables, the Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I've not got a chance to play it because it was one of those games with gold things with Xbox. So right. I'm not got a chance to sit down and play it, but it looks... I've played part of it, and it's looks amazing so far. You actually play it as Bigby Wolf.
Yeah, this this series, the funny thing is, this series was inadvertently leaked a couple of weeks ago when there was a story about the walkout for voice actors and a possible strike coming up, and how the people behind the Telltale series actually has a history of treating voice talent very well. And so in the process of reporting this, somebody mentioned this game that Marvel had kind of been very hush-hush about, you know? And so, so you had a little bit of a, you know, 2-week premature, no leak, but that's okay.
And the good thing about these games is they, because it's kind of like the motion comic sort of thing, they release them as episodes or issues.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
And they could kind of go as long as they'd want to, depending on popularity.
Yeah, I believe this one is a 5-part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But yeah, so if, you know, so you get to...
And that works well for people who aren't, like, consistent gamers. They just, like, it takes them a while to get through something. Mm-hmm. So having just one issue at a time versus someone who'll finish it fast and just wait for the next one, and then they actually have something new to play.
Exactly.
So it's actually, it's better for gamers like me. It takes us forever to get through a game just because we don't have a whole lot of time to sit down and play.
Yeah, or like me, who plays like maybe for an hour a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it says here that the series will also hit retail as a special season pass disc, which will include the first episode in the season and will grant access to the subsequent 4 episodes as they become available for download via online updates. So
you can buy it all at once if you don't want to buy it issue by issue.
Yeah. Right.
That's cool.
So we're just going to keep our eyes and ears open for that.
Cool.
So that was a couple of pretty cool surprise gaming stories mm-hmm. that come out this week.
I do have one that I found out about last night from Mike over at Weeby Geeks. And I know, Dawn, you guys are Disney fans. Have you heard what's happening to Spaceship Earth?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Well, if anybody else didn't know, it would have already happened by the time you get this, so go to the Disney Parks blog to see the video. I'm thinking this is going to look amazing, but Mike knew about this 3 weeks ago and couldn't tell anybody anything.
Uh-huh.
They had him locked down tight. But they are actually, as of Monday of this week, they turned the Spaceship Earth into the Death Star.
Which people have been calling it that since it first opened.
Exactly.
So, it's about
Mike
time.
If they really want to make it impressive, they need to take that thing and figure out a way to fire the super laser. Reflecting a laser off the dish just right or something.
That's right.
That would be phenomenally beautiful.
Yeah, they I did see that they released that they were going to do that to celebrate Rogue One. So
I don't know why they're doing it like a week and a half ahead of time, but hey. And it's only a one-night thing.
Well, it's because they're having it was some kind of special event. I think they had like a, I don't know if it was a red carpet event or something special they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was for.
Cool. Well, we'll know more for recording time for us. It'll be tomorrow, but you guys would have already known it by the time this drops.
Yeah.
Right.
So I just wanted to mention it because that's awesome.
Yeah.
And one last bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I feel about this. I really don't. Because the movie Escape from New York is very near and dear to my heart, okay?
Oh, I did see this one.
Yeah.
And there have been rumors off and on about remakes and attempted remakes, but it looks like it's actually going to happen, okay? So the 1981 classic, or cult classic, I guess you'd call it, is coming back, and it looks like it's going to actually be a TV series.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so here's the thing. First, New York City isn't exactly New York City.
Well, if you... No, recap the original, because there's some people who may not know it.
Okay, so Reader's Digest version of the original. Snake Plissken, criminal ex-special forces guy gets called in because the president's plane goes down over New York City, over Manhattan Island.
And this is kind of a post-apocalyptic
thing. Yeah, this is a post-apocalyptic thing. So Manhattan Island is now a walled-off maximum security prison. Air Force One has gone down, and a gang of prisoners has taken them hostage.
And someone has to rescue the president.
So they call in Snake Plissken because he's the only guy who's crazy enough and dirty enough to go to get in there and do it.
Played by Kurt Russell.
And so I think the idea is that if he does it, they'll give him his freedom and pardon or whatever. So he agrees to do it.
And much action and mayhem and death ensues. And
yes. Oh, and Isaac Hayes is in it, too. Look out for Isaac Hayes.
Of course he's in it.
Awesome.
Of course.
And Adrian Barbeau. But I digress.
For the teenage boys, Adrian Barbeau.
Was Kurt Russell in the sequel, Escape from L.A.?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He's the only one that can play Snake. This is the point. One of the problems doing a reboot, because he's not playing Snake.
Right. Now, mind you, the super awesome thing that's going on is there's a series now that puts Snake Plissken with Jack Burton.
A comic book series.
I'm like, how much awesome in one comic? I think the thing just burns. Like, you know, it just burns up.
Now, back to the reboot.
Back to the reboot, because I digressed. Now.
That's what we do.
So.
Exactly.
So, New York City is not New York City, okay?
It is, but it's not a prison.
Yeah, it's not a prison. It's a utopian society that is run by an AI system and drones, and patrolled by drones.
It still has the big wall around it.
But it's almost more or less keeping undesirables out. And Snake is now a colonel. He has a full name, Colonel Robert Snake Plissken.
He doesn't look like a Robert.
He does not look like a Robert.
I don't know
if we're going to get
how far
an
into the future is this?
Because Colonel Robert Snake Plissken doesn't seem like he has an eye patch.
So how long in the future is this supposed to be?
I don't think it specifies.
There's a different bad guy this time. His name is Thomas Newton. He's a wealthy playboy heir to an agrochemical and biotech corporation. He's donated his entire fortune to charity 5 years ago.
Okay.
So he's the new bad guy. And there's
he sounds
a new
like a Lex Luthor type.
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
And there's a new character, CIA Deputy Executive Director Roberta Hawke. And so the other thing is that we don't know what the whole escape part is, except it looks like there's a storm coming. It says there's a huge destructive hurricane that's coming, as Colonel Snake only has 11 hours to complete his mission, whatever it may be. So
we don't know the mission, and the storm is coming, which will probably potentially destroy the walls around New York, and people will invade it. So he has to get in and escape with probably important people.
And see, that's the thing. Like, okay.
And now it sounds like 24 because he has 11
hours.
That's
what I thought of when you said that.
I'm not one of those people. You know, I don't automatically like clinch up whenever there's a remake. I'm open to other people's interpretation, other artists.
This goes beyond the original though. Like, it's one thing to have a reboot that has the similar characters and storylines and plot, and you're like, okay, that's fine. We'll still call it the same name because it's close enough. This is not even close, though. I mean, okay, you've got Snake, and you've got a city with a wall around it. That's it.
Like, Lethal Weapon got it right because it's still Lethal Weapon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Murtaugh,
yeah, those movies were based around those two characters. What they were doing didn't make the movie.
Right.
No.
It was the interaction of the characters.
You know, but this right here, I don't know.
Depending on what it is, sometimes I think I like a reboot more as rebooted as a TV series. Sometimes a little bit more if it's something like a Lethal Weapon, where it's actually you're giving you more of the actual characters that made the movie. And this
right.
one,
right. They're
if you're
expanding
not,
the universe,
yeah,
right.
If you're not expanding the universe and more of who Snake is, then it's just not the same.
No. Yeah, like, I realized, because I was talking to Kylan about this, I'm like, I realize they've called it this because people know Escape from New York, and that's why they're going to tune it in.
Yeah.
But it's just not. Like, it's not, it doesn't have any feel so far. It doesn't have any feel of the movie, the sequel. It just doesn't.
It doesn't.
No. They should have called it something else and changed the character name.
It's okay. I mean, even yeah, if but then you take something would... like, if you take something like Hawaii 5-0, which, when Hawaii 5-0 first started, I was all about it because when I was a kid, I watched the original, but it was a little bit beyond me and I thought it was kind of boring. But when I started watching the new series, I kind of like the fact that they kept McGarrett a Navy officer, but they made him a SEAL instead of just, you know, naval intelligence or whatever. And, you know, and they kind of kicked it up a notch. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm loving this. So it was still a familiar property, but it was its own, you know. Mm-hmm. This is a case where it's a completely different animal. This doesn't have to have Snake Plissken. It doesn't. But, you know, okay. I will give it a shot. I'm going to keep my eyes open, of course, and as things continue to progress and more news comes out, I'll be willing to share it. But yeah, I'm kind of...
Any news on where this is going to be at?
You know what? I don't know why I'm thinking FX, but...
It sounds like their type of show.
It does sound like their type of show. I don't think they said in the postings that we saw.
No.
But...
No,
we'll find out. Well, I mean, as things develop and we find out casting and stuff, we'll drop info.
Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, I have to admit, that's probably gonna be the big thing for me is who do you get to play Snake? You know.
Yeah. That's an iconic character, so I don't know.
They gotta get Well, that's that character there. Wasn't he the loose basis for the Metal Gear Solid series? The character from that.
Yeah.
Was it supposed to be a loose based on Snake Plissken?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, that's the reason why he has the eye patch.
He has the eye patch, yeah,
and the hairstyle too.
So, there was another the Star Trek news about Brian Fuller leaving. Is that something we covered already?
I think that was after the fact, man.
Because actually, for Star Trek Discovery, we have new showrunners. I have to look this up real quick. Brian Fuller finally, because we had talked about Brian Fuller being the guy who was doing the show running, but he was also doing American Gods.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He's finally decided he has to step down from Star Trek because American Gods is taking a lot more of his time than he expected.
And Star Trek hadn't started filming yet.
Exactly. He had to make, basically it came down to he had to make a decision one way or the other. Yeah. I gotta remember what, I had it on Blaster is the one that had this news.
Like, all they've announced aside from that for Star Trek so far is the three people they've cast, and they said that there was some preliminary set building on, so they're still a way.
Yeah, there it is. They're still, well, we know it's not coming out till the spring anyway,
right?
Which actually gives them the chance they could actually run this as a summer series on CBS if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But I know Brian Fuller said he's no longer involved. He did write he did all of the pre-production work already. They know the full story arc of what's going on for the first season. They have the first couple of scripts already done that he was involved in. So this is still going to be, and he still has an executive producer credit on it.
Right.
It's just, mm-hmm, he's not running the day-to-day anymore.
Right. I mean, executive producers get the credit for being involved from the start anyway.
Exactly.
So.
Let me see. I'll find the names of the guys who are actually in charge now. The new showrunners are Gretchen Berg and Aaron Hartzberg.
Okay.
So I have no idea what else they've done, but it says, this is a quote from them. It says, creating Discovery and getting to the heart of what is important, what is the important themes were to me as a Star Trek fan. How do we get along with people who are different than ourselves? How do we find common ground? How do we move into the future together? Those themes were implicit in the scripts that I wrote before I left and the storylines. Now, that was actually from Brian Fuller. So that's the type of stuff he put into it already before the new people took over. Now, they should be filming sometime in the next month, probably right after the holidays, they should be starting filming on this.
Right.
And being a TV sci-fi show, they could film the first show and within a month be ready to air it.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they have part of the pilot already filmed.
Well, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff they could do in pre-existing studios and stuff that they don't need to build specific sets for.
Exactly. Well, if you go back and look at Next Generation and even original Star Trek, what they did, they had like two sound stages for the entire series.
Mm-hmm.
And how often that was a totally new alien world every week.
Right.
And that was being filmed weekly per episode.
Yeah.
So they could actually do, especially newer stuff with the CG and stuff they could do on TV now.
Mm-hmm.
They could do some phenomenal stuff with this. So that's all I have right now on that is the fact that Fuller's gone and they have the two new people in there now. It's not anything, and it wasn't anything that he's having problems with the other producers or the studio or anything. It's just he has too much on his plate.
Yeah, it's just work schedule. That's what happens with a lot of them. They want to sign up for so many of these different things, and then it's kind of like whatever comes to fruition first, they drop the rest.
That's Guillermo del Toro. How many names? Yes. How many times has his name been put on something, and then you find out later he's been pulled off of it?
No kidding.
So, but I think that's almost the new stuff we had, wasn't it?
Yep.
Well, something kind of exciting happened in TV this week, and you guys saw all four of them, right? Or at least the three main ones.
It was not the three main ones, yeah.
We had the DC CW TV crossover of The Invasion. Now, have you guys read the original story of Invasion?
No.
I suggest you go back and do it. It's Todd McFarlane did the artwork for the first two. It was 1989. It was a three-part crossover for the DC Comics that actually crossed over into all their other titles like most of the big events do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's weird because the third title really doesn't have a lot to do with the first two. You can tell they had a new writer come in and they had new artists come in. So the first two are 80 pages each. Comixology actually has them at I think it's $2 an issue for the 80 pages of each. And what it is there's this alien race called the Dominators that decide they found out that Earth, being the only planet that has metahumans, it seems like metahumans are the only people that actually could stand in their way of universal domination, basically. And they found out that metahumans are the only ones with a strange like X factor that they can't figure out what to do with.
Right.
Because you never know; it's a random thing. You never know what the metahumans are going to do. Well, they've put together a coalition of other alien races to actually help attack Earth and destroy all the metahumans. And the other alien races in the Alliance don't realize that the Dominators want to just take over the entire universe anyway.
Right. So in the original story, there's actually more races involved.
Yes.
Okay.
In
this one, being that it's only a three-hour show, they really couldn't do as much.
No, no, exactly.
And in the original one, the Dominators were not fighters. They had those big teeth and everything else, but they're just walking around in robes. They're the ones basically calling the shots from behind. But they had alien races like one called the Kund, which was all your ground troops in your army. They had another race that was all the scientists and things like that.
Right.
The one race that we do know from the TV series is called the Daxamites, who are part of this alliance too, but they were observers. They didn't want to actually get involved in it. And if anybody doesn't know or you haven't seen it on Supergirl, the Daxamites, Daxam was another planet in the same solar system as Krypton that was originally colonized by Krypton eons ago. So it's enough that their body, they're essentially genetically Kryptonian with some slight changes because of the amount of time they've lived off of Krypton.
Cool.
Things like they're not susceptible to kryptonite, but they're weak against lead. Stuff like that was from there. So when they actually come to the Earth to do the observing and see watch what's going on, all of a sudden they have all the powers of Superman.
Right.
And they don't know why, being that there's no other Kryptonians running around that they know of. So right. They basically, in the comic book, they show up on Earth, they take over Australia first, and then it takes about halfway through, the humans working with metahumans and the superheroes actually start fighting back, the heroes and the villains of Earth all working together, eventually repel the invasion. And the third part really isn't as big, except for it has to do with the gene bomb, a metabomb. Which in this one they use the metabomb also to take out metahumans. But if you can see the crossovers that are happening here with this. They took a lot of the ideas from the comic book and put it into the series. After they repel the invasion, they make an alliance or they make a treaty with the aliens that they would leave and never come back. The Daxamites actually, after working with Superman and seeing how Superman, a non-Earthling, is willing to put his life on the line to help them, ends up. They end up switching sides and joining with Earth, and that's one of the major reasons why the Alliance loses.
Ah, okay.
Because now they're fighting an army of Superman.
Right.
They weren't ready for that one. So so as they're leaving, one of the other things that you don't get in this that was in the comic book was the Dominators themselves, that big red dot on their forehead, the size of that dot is a caste system. If you're not the higher ranking you are in the... in their society, the bigger the dot on your forehead.
Okay.
Okay.
So, but if you don't, but there's no way to change your ranking either, to get move up or move down.
Right.
So the scientist who creates the gene bomb was in the lower caste, but he couldn't, no one would listen to him at all about this.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes and drops down on Earth on his own, and what it does is that actually starts killing all the metahumans. But it also activates the metagene in people who are not already metahumans. If they have a metagene, it started activating it.
Oh, right. Okay.
So people like Snapper Carr, do you guys know who he is?
Yeah.
He's in the Supergirl series now. But Snapper Carr before this did not have powers, but he is a metahuman after this.
Mm-hmm.
He actually becomes where he can snap his fingers and teleport.
Right.
Well, that's because of the metabomb. So a lot of stuff that ideas and stuff that have made it into the mainstream DC universe now were because of Invasion back then.
Okay.
But getting into the TV series crossover now, what did you guys think of the show overall? I mean, for a 3-part, and actually each one was, the Flash one was a Flash episode with the other people. Arrow was an Arrow episode, and Legends was a Legends episode. But I think it did pretty good of giving everybody equal time.
I'd say it did. You know, although of all of them, I really enjoyed Arrow the most, because I think it was
the 100th episode. Yeah,
it was the 100th episode, so it did a really good job of nodding to his past, and you kind of get to see some familiar characters that have been long gone.
Oh yeah.
Well, I think they did a good job with Arrow celebrating the past without a hokey flashback episode.
Right. Yeah. Right.
You know, and it made sense within the storyline that they were captured at the time, and mm-hmm. they were all having this shared incident going on that, you know, made it made sense that everyone was showing up and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and I wondered if it was ever going to come out that Diggle will have a daughter as opposed mm-hmm. to a son. You know,
it would eventually.
I think it had to. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But I mean, they had to create some kind of tension within the team that wasn't there just because of the aliens.
Right.
You know, so that the whole, you know, telling everyone about Flashpoint and everything that changed created the tension they needed, I think. And mm-hmm. then the bit where Ollie didn't really want to get too involved with Supergirl.
Right.
Yeah.
That created something too.
Well, the one thing they did great that I think they've done awesome is they stayed away from the CW tropes a little bit. Because mm-hmm. most CW shows, if something like that where Barry's gone back and changed the timeline and, I now have a son instead of a daughter and all this stuff, a lot of the other CW shows, that would have been a sticking point and something that would cause drama for, like, the entire season.
Right.
Whereas most of these CW superhero shows, the Berlanti shows, they'll bring something up like that and then pass it within that show. They'll find a resolution and move on. The way you do. You know what I mean? A lot of times, if a conflict like that happens in real life, most people don't sit there and sit on it for weeks and months and years. A lot of people will actually figure out a way to come to a consensus about this and move on. Yeah, it's going to affect what happens from here on, but it's not going to be the main thing that's causing everything.
Well, I think that worked with Cisco, too, because it's been a few episodes since he found out that the timeline killed off his brother.
Yeah.
Right.
And he hadn't been forgiving Barry. And then because of what happens in the episode, he realizes that he made that choice and that made all those changes. And then that must have been exactly what happened with Barry without even thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it kind of brought that around where Cisco could finally forgive Barry for doing something he didn't even think about.
Right.
Exactly.
And then the thing with Martin and Stein and his daughter.
Yes.
Right.
And Caitlin at one point said, well, is that something that Barry did? And he said, no, that was my fault.
Right.
So we have multiple people affecting timelines here,
right,
too.
Exactly. Well, that's one thing a lot of people have been wondering about, because the Legends of Tomorrow, they're changing stuff all the time.
Mm. Right.
They're always playing with time.
And the thing is, they're trying to correct some things. Because, I mean, you know, you didn't have zombies in the Civil War, presumably. So they're trying to correct some things like that. While at the same time not trying to mess with things too much. And, you know, Sarah keeps talking about how, you know, I could bring my sister back and I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yet everyone else is doing their own thing half the time. So.
Right.
Yeah, it's crazy the way they're doing some of this stuff. And I like the way Legends a lot of times does it, though, that when they do make a change, it doesn't stick right away.
Yeah.
No.
So they can, and them being outside of time... I like how they kind of showed, without saying it, that them being outside of time, really Flashpoint doesn't affect the crew of the Wave Rider.
Right.
No.
Because time was changed, but since they were not in the timeline at that point, they didn't get changed.
Well, it's like Martin didn't even realize what he had done made a difference until he was suddenly in 2016 and boom, there's his daughter.
Right.
Like, exactly.
Otherwise, if there had been no alien invasion, they likely would not have shown up in 2016, perhaps ever.
Right.
And he never would have known he had a daughter.
Mm-mm.
Well, except that he was getting those headaches already.
Oh, yeah.
So.
What about his wife?
Yeah, and what happened to his wife? Where's she at?
Well, she apparently still exists, though, because there was nothing said about her not being around.
Right.
Well, you gotta remember, when he first saw his daughter, he asked where his wife was, and she's like, what are you talking, quit joking around. So is she dead, or is she just in a different house, or what?
Yeah, I didn't get the impression that she was dead.
Maybe they're split up.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
So, but, I know there was a bunch of great spoilers, or not spoilers, but Easter eggs and stuff in this, too. Mm-hmm. What'd you think of seeing the Hall of Justice, even though it's out in the middle of an airfield somewhere?
That was
cool. I mean, okay, can I just say, though, for anyone in Ohio, if you drive through Cincinnati, you've already seen the Hall of Justice, so it's not as impressive.
Well, it was weird that, what I thought was weird was, I had totally forgotten that Barry owns Star Labs now.
Right.
I mean, yeah. I had totally lost that 100%. So how many buildings do they have just around the world and stuff?
Exactly. And the funny thing is, like, it was cool to see the Hall of Justice, but then it had those Star Labs things on either side. It just didn't look right.
Well, the thing, I remember being a kid, and there was a Hall of Justice playset that looked like the one from Super Friends, and it had airstrip in the back, just like the hall in the show. And I'm just like, all of a sudden, I was like, I'm looking at the 1976 Wish book again. Like, I remember that. You know?
Well, yeah, but I mean, think about it. They presented the Hall of Justice as an airplane hangar. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, did you guys catch some of the little Easter eggs and stuff that they threw in there? The big one for me was the one at the end of the Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh, you mean where...
The cousin?
Did you catch that before they actually said something about it on the internet?
Oh, yeah, we caught it when we saw the episode. We didn't see anything online.
That's kind of sweet, the reference to... Because for how long has people been talking about this, how it's kind
of
cool that he was Superman at one point.
I caught it the night of because of
Bart. Right.
Yeah. But how cool is it that he played Superman, now he's actually playing another character in the DC Universe, and they've not... Mm-hmm. This entire time... Legends is on their second season, and he was on a complete one season of Arrow, but they've not put any references to him being Superman.
Right.
And so finally they have Supergirl in the series, and he says, oh, you look kind of like my cousin.
And I like the fact that they also noted that she looks almost exactly like Felicity.
Yeah. Well, what they did with Supergirl was awesome because they showed that she is way overpowered for their team.
Well, quite honestly, with her showing up on the other shows, it made me glad that I don't actually watch Supergirl anymore because she's still far too bubbly. I don't like her happy nature. It just does not work for me.
Yeah. But like I said, though, the nice thing was they showed that she is way too overpowered for this universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they didn't overuse her in this.
Sarah Walker.
True.
So, when did that...
I was kind of surprised at their ultimate solution.
Yeah.
Like, based on the fact that they were trying to be nice to everybody, ultimately, and then they were just like, let's put these things on them that will cause excruciating pain.
Yeah.
And make them all go away.
Right.
I mean, I know it was one of the few ways they could actually do it, but without just outright killing everyone somehow, but it just seemed a little odd to me.
Yeah, it was, but since if you watch what they did, it only was like a couple of seconds and stuff, you know what I mean?
Right.
But like you said, there really was no other way. We had to give them a reason to leave.
Yeah.
But then again, why the Dominators not figure this out and just pull the devices off of themselves?
Yeah. I mean, well, that's one of the things they said. They had to make sure to get them all on all of them.
Yeah.
So that they wouldn't figure it out, which, I mean, gave them an excuse to use both Barry and Supergirl's speed powers at the same time sort of thing. But, I mean, and it did show that, you know, the Earth will fight back and you'll hate it sort of thing.
That's right. So, and the cool thing is they showed... In this, they did keep the whole thing that the Dominators wanted to get rid of the metahumans. In this one, they had them say straight up that it was Barry that was the problem. But through Barry, they wanted all metahumans could be issues for the universe.
Right.
So they kept that theme in there. They kept the whole theme with Barry true to his character, as well as sacrifice himself for everybody else. Mm-hmm. That's a straight up Flash thing from everywhere. Even in the comic books, he's always been like that.
Right.
So it's like they didn't really change any of the characters in this at all. And then they made it so much easier at the end of this to finally... Or it's cool to see Vibe using his powers a lot more often. Or not just more often, but with more accuracy and knowing what he's doing now. You can see he's been practicing with them.
True.
I'm waiting... Huh? Yeah. Oh, when else have we ever seen Firestorm actually start using his transmutation powers?
In Russia?
Did he? It's been very rare that he's using the transmutations.
That's true.
It's kind of one of those powers I think they forget about. They're like, oh, wait, we can have him do that because he can do that.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, that's his number one power in the comic books.
Right.
He transmutes things. That's what he does. That's why he's the Atomic Man.
When they had the bombs, they were disarmed. Last one to water.
Oh, yeah. I remember. He did do that earlier this year or last year. I remember he did that. Yeah, the bomb in Russia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That he turned into water. That was sweet. And then he did the same thing to the gene bomb this time.
Yep.
So it's like that'd be cool to see him do that a little more often, I think. Because like you said, it's like they forget that power exists.
And I think they did a good job of not just keeping the characters as they were, but having them work well together.
Yes.
Like the way Sisko worked with Felicity and that kind of, and the whole group when they were working with the alien tech to pull something out of it.
Yeah.
And just kind of like the powers complementing each other and the skills complementing each other. They did a good job of keeping the characters together like that without it seeming too awkward.
Mm-hmm. Right.
His wildest dream.
And some of the stuff where the characters moved forward on things, like we already talked on it a little bit, but stuff like Stein changing his mind about his daughter and these things, they actually took a lot. What I've been looking at the beginning of this season, they've been putting a lot of problems in front of these characters.
Yeah.
It seems like they did what was predicted, that was all building up to this, where we resolved most of those problems that we've seen in the first 8 or 9 episodes of these shows.
True.
So, I know moving forward, Flash is, it's weird because Flash has their finale next week.
Mm-hmm.
Or this week, actually. It's already been on by the time this airs.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when the other ones are, but it's like, you're hitting a lot of stuff in the last couple of weeks that you're going to have to pay that off later.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the biggest problems with having crossovers like this is that, number one, for people who don't watch all of the shows, they're either completely confused or forced to watch other shows where they don't know the characters.
Yeah.
Or the plot lines going on. And secondly, all of like this, the entire last week of the shows, it took them out of their regular, you know, regularly scheduled program. So now you're jumping back into the plots they had before the invasion. So it's almost like, I almost felt like maybe the crossover invasions, they should have made those the mid-season finale for all four of the shows.
Yeah.
I can see that, yeah.
You know, because then they can jump back into the ramifications of it, plus their main plots that they were already dealing with.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing is they did actually, you could tell they made an effort to make each of these shows a different show, so that the Flash show still felt like a Flash show with all these other people in it. Arrow was definitely an Arrow show.
Yeah.
It had all the Arrow characters and everything. And then Legends was a Legends team-up show.
Yeah, I think Arrow felt the least like a complete crossover.
Yeah.
Because partly I think that was because it was their 100th episode and they had to focus on maintaining that and making it a full-on milestone episode.
Yeah.
And not worrying too much about, which is what I think worked about them being in their little stasis kind of thing, because then they could focus on the Arrow story and then Ollie leading them out and all that kind of stuff.
So now Arrow's hit 100. Who's going to be the first network to pick up the syndication rights for Arrow?
Well, TNT already has it, so.
Oh, okay. See, that's, for anybody who doesn't know, in television, I don't know if it's a written rule or an unwritten rule, that you, once you hit 100 episodes, you can start selling it for syndication.
Yeah, I think it's one of those unwritten rules that's kind of like proven success.
Yeah. So it's like once you get to 100 episodes, someone can buy you and actually start syndicating you and you start getting more money.
Yep.
So all in all, I think I did it really well with this crossover, though.
It was good. The story itself didn't feel too drawn out. So I think there was a lot they could pack into it to keep every episode exciting to make you want to watch the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it worked overall. I'm not huge on crossovers like in comics and stuff. So it was interesting just to see how they managed to make it work, but I think they did a good job.
But looking forward in the Flaro universe, this is not going to affect Supergirl much because this was basically just her in their universe. Other than the fact that now she can actually get a hold of them when she actually does need help.
Or vice versa.
They have. Exactly. Or if they need help, they can call her.
Yeah.
But looking forward, what do you think of the possibilities of them actually starting a DEO on the Flaro side?
You know, I think it would be good to see that, but I don't know. I can't see them bringing in a an alien equivalent to Supergirl to work with the DEO. I think they'll probably treat the DEO the way they treat, well, it's not Argus anymore, is it?
Yeah, it is.
What's the name of
it? No, it's still Argus.
It's still Argus, okay. I think they'll treat the DEO the way they treat Argus. You know, it's going to be a separate organization that will show up every once in a while. I can't see... Team Arrow has to stay grounded, sort of like the way it is now. I think it will change the show too much for them to introduce an alien character, you know, to be the liaison between, you know, the DEO and what's going on with the people in Star City.
See, I almost feel like it would fit better on Flash because they have a lot more in the metahuman realm.
That's what I'm thinking is the DEO would be the DEO would be a good spot for in Flash to be the Argus place in Flash.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, that's just it because you already Legends, have the big know. Unit in Arrow and yeah.
So but what's the chance of us get of that agent guy
was a sneak on that one too.
Say what?
Supergirl was a sneaky on that one too.
Yeah, giving the president the idea.
Yeah.
But what's it? Do you guys know much about the DEO in comics at all?
No.
Well, it's an organization that's been around for a while, but there was a guy named Director Bones. Now, I don't know a whole lot about it, but I guess he's like a living skeleton who's actually in charge of the DEO.
Nice.
So what that old agent guy, it'd be kind of interesting to see him actually in charge of like a DEO.
Yeah.
And do something like that, like he all of a sudden becomes a metahuman of some sort or something.
That's true, because it's usually the ones who hate them the most that they end up converting them to something.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, thinking overall, we had a good time. I had a good time. Vicky, you had a good time with this, right? So, you guys sound like this was a win. And once again, it showed me that the Berlanti and Kreisberg know how to write superhero shows. Even you guys, Dawn, you've said you don't like Supergirl, but it seems like it's not the show itself you don't like, it's the character that you're not a fan of.
Yeah, it is more the character than the show. I didn't like the way, I don't really like the flow of the show overall, but it is more the character than the show that I don't like.
Yeah, so it's like, they're solid on all their shows. It's personal preference is a totally different thing than saying it's a terrible show, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, so, and they utilized her well in the crossover. I'm not saying she didn't work. I mean, because you kind of needed an alien in this instance, but they have very few to choose from in their TV universe at the moment.
Especially one that can beat down the entire team all at once.
Exactly. So, yeah, no, it works.
Yeah, imagine if they had brought Superman over with her.
Well,
you know, or Martian Manhunter. They have three aliens running around there. At least.
Honestly, I would have loved to have seen Martian Manhunter involved in this one.
Yeah,
or even Mon-El.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
So,
but see, I mean, this obviously opens the doors for a lot more crossover stuff, and I just hope they don't do it too often. You know, it's one of those things that it's nice to have every once in a while because then you can look forward to it. But if it keeps happening, you're just like, oh, this again.
Yeah,
you know.
Chance for Superman to be used.
Yeah. We get a chance to possibly see Tyler Hoechlin in one of these shows here or there. I like the idea of them using Superman as a once a year maybe thing that he steps in and does something and leaves.
Right.
But he was the one that had to get rescued this time.
Yeah. but there was something else I had in there. I don't remember off the top of my head, but
Mon-El in love with Supergirl.
Yeah, well that's over on Supergirl. So I think that wraps up what we got on this, isn't it?
I think so.
So we're getting close to time anyway. Geeksters, I want to just a quick reminder. Remember, Oddmall is this weekend, November 10th and 11th, down in Canton, Ohio. Go to oddmall.info for all the information about that. Guys, do you have anything else before we wrap this up?
No, I think we're good.
No, we're good.
Vicky, did you have anything you wanted to cover on? No? Okay. So, Geeksters, remember, you can always find us on the internet at geekwatch1.com. That's the base to find everything. All social media is also geekwatch1. If you put us into Google as geekwatch1, you will find us. Remember, you can always send us an email also. What'd you think of Invasion? Was it cool? Was it terrible? Was it, Let us know at geekwatch1@gmail.com. You can also find us on the Tangent Bound and the Weeby Geeks networks. And then, if there's nothing else, for Miss Dawn and for Kylan and for Miss Vicky and myself, just remember,
no matter where you go, there you are.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.